Over the past year, more than 8,000 foster care children in Oregon have endured constantly adapting to new situations, from where they live to how they learn. This means struggling to learn in front of a computer for hours on end, to now, after a year of online learning, adjusting going back to school while wearing a mask, social distancing, and learning in a classroom. Many foster children already face falling into serious statistics and being one of the less than 5% who will attend college or be one of under 50% who will not graduate high school. And their chances of becoming homeless or incarcerated are significantly higher than their peers. Portland's oldest child welfare organization, Boys and Girls Aid, is working to ensure that the challenges and obstacles of learning during the pandemic do not keep foster children and youth from having all the tools and resources they need to be successful students. Today, I spoke with Boys and Girls Aid, Sue Keller, who is the program director of The Neighborhood, a program that supports foster care youth and their specific needs, such as remote learning. Here is more with my interview with Sue Keller.
What are some things that you want listeners to know about your organization and the foster care system at large right now? What can people do and what should they know about?
Well, currently our foster care system it's overloaded. The caseloads of our DHS staff are not manageable in a timely manner. And we know this. The whole world knows this. Agencies like Boys and Girls Aid are here to assist with that, to be an alternative to standard foster care. And we partner with DHS, and we find them to be extremely helpful in so many ways. I was thinking about this interview and just thinking about a time over the pandemic when I had a youth who had a COVID exposure and needed to be quarantined. And unfortunately, we did not have the staff or support available to quarantine him for the full length of time. And it was really amazing that DHS was able to step up and provide a kind of a respite placement where that youth could safely go during the quarantine and enjoy his time and not feel penalized by what was going on, but rather it was more of a vacation. They had really put everything in place and worked really well with us to make sure that it was as comfortable for the youth as it possibly could be. And as you know, this is not a comfortable time, right? There's nothing comfortable about constantly jumping from home to home. And so I was just thinking of that example because this youth's DHS caseworker worked with me so quickly and so compassionately to make sure that the placement for this youth was supportive and warm and really helped, you know, my team, who was feeling awful that some of us were sick and not able to provide the care that we needed to be able to provide, and also really support that youth and give him a safe place to stay. So I think it's really important for the community to understand that there are a multitude of agencies beyond DHS that are attempting to do this work and attempting to serve children in need. And there are a multitude of ways that you can get involved, whether it be directly with DHS or with an agency such as ours. And it doesn't have to be necessarily being a foster parent, although I beg of you, if you're available to be a foster parent, you have no idea the amazing impact you will make in the life of a child. But if that is outside the means of what your family can do, there are so many other ways to get involved. And it's as easy as just contacting an agency like Boys and Girls Aid and saying, I want to help. What can I do? And they will just give you a litany of ideas.
Can you tell us what were some of the challenges that all foster children were facing working with organizations before the pandemic? And then how is the pandemic worsened or created new issues?
Well, from the perspective of just a parent who's been a foster parent, I will tell you, you know, that all foster children come in with their own trauma history, and it affects the way that they interact in a school setting. It affects their ability to learn and the support that they need. Virtual, having to switch to distance learning or virtual learning is obviously going to weigh heavily on that. Generally in school, children who have that level of need receive certain supports from paraprofessionals, and that same support is not obviously available in a distance learning setting. So I will say, from the perspective of a foster parent or even just a parent, watching children in general struggle with the transition from in-person learning and being able to have immediate access to their teachers and hands-on learning experiences to something on a screen where they need to sit in place all day is very difficult. From my perspective in my program, which is the Neighborhood at Boys and Girls Aid, we serve teens ages 12 to 18 of all genders throughout three different counties. And those teenagers have all been receiving some type of paraprofessional support when they are in school. They also have teams of people assisting them. They have multiple services that they receive in the community. They have flexibility of schedule. They have things like breaks throughout the day so that they can, you know, just kind of chill for a minute, regroup themselves, get ready to pay back attention. And to put them in front of a screen from, say, 9:30 to 3:30 Monday through Friday and hope that they are going to just sit there and listen to a teacher lecture with no assistance has really been a sad and disappointing struggle for these youth.
Obviously, most parents and those in your position and those who work with you, I'm sure, just want children to be able to safely go back to school in person. In the meantime, what can help these kids who are in this situation, whether they're foster care children or not, who are, but especially foster care children, who are, like you said, struggling with so many things that they've experienced and are continuing to experience. And learning is just really difficult right now. Learning, like you said, by yourself, without any assistance through a screen.
Yeah, so for the neighborhood program specifically through Boys and Girls Aid, and let me just preface by saying what this program does for foster children is, or has been prior to the pandemic, not just providing you know, support or a foster home for the youth to live in, but we also were providing day programming, which meant that if there are appointments that youth needed to get to during the day, our staff was going and getting them and taking them to those appointments. They would come to our program after school each day. We could assist them with homework. We could assist them with life skills training, social interactions, opportunities for peer development. And so every day, at least Monday through Friday, they were having access to assistance even outside of school, right? So building social skills, getting assistance with their academics, all of those things were additional benefits by being in a program such as the neighborhood. Unfortunately, when the pandemic hit, we had to weigh following all the guidelines set out by the CDC, and we had to weigh that against the services that the youth needed, and we had to make a decision to close our day programming facility. And when we closed that facility, these foster parents, who frequently are two working parents, were put in a position where now they had youth who needed 24/7 sight and sound supervision in their home, who needed them to assist with virtual learning throughout the day and after school care and all of the services we provided, while at the same time trying to manage their own jobs and continue to work. And this has proved for some families to really be an impossible feat. And so what happens is, the youth most frequently are the ones to lose out because they don't have the same levels of support that they had prior to the pandemic. And unfortunately, for safety, for the safety of their families, for the safety of our staff, and obviously for the safety of the client themselves, we have had to prioritize keeping them in their homes and not exposing them to other youth for the majority of the pandemic. So as a result, the youth have really, really lost out on those supports, both academic and skill building, that they normally would have had access to. And the parents have lost out on that ability to have the time away from the youth in order to manage their own careers. So it's been a real hardship to all parties involved. And of course, you have to consider the safety of our staff in the situation where when many people are able to work from home, a direct care staff has to be with a child at all times. And regardless of if we can keep those youth home with their foster parents, we still are required by the state to provide a certain amount of behavioral rehabilitation skills on a weekly basis. And so direct care support does still have to occur. So we had a lot of things that we had to factor in when we were considering our best practices and going forward with the pandemic. And at times, as things started to seem like they were lifting a little and we were doing better, we would have discussions on, you know, what could next steps look like? Phase one, phase two, phase three. And the agency was so diligent about making sure that they were planning in advance for this and keeping us posted and up to date. But what we finally found was just the burden of having the kids home all day, every day with no assistance was proving to be such a hardship to their academics and to their family that we were going to have to take some kind of action in order to help the youth succeed and help the parents survive this all in all. So in the case of our program, we went to great lengths to develop a program. We call it pod learning. We use a space out in our Beaverton location, and it's a big office space. And in that giant office space, we can safely host about three youth and two staff at a time with social distancing and obviously following all of the CDC guidelines. And the youth can come to the program 2 days a week and get direct care and assistance all day during their classes. And that gives them also 2 days a week where the parents have free to be able to focus on their jobs. And so that's been helpful. It also allows my staff to be more engaged with what's going on with each youth, who frequently each youth goes to a different high school because they're all from different areas and different counties. So it gives the staff a chance to engage directly with the supports at the school and understand where there might be some lagging skills in academics and where we can better support them, both when they're with us and where we can advise the foster parents for the times when they're back in the home.
Absolutely. And I wanted to ask, you know, how are kids doing? How has that improved their learning? And is there anything that folks who are listening or want to, you know, encourage other folks to either donate their resources or time to help specifically with foster care children and this program?
You know, one of the things at the beginning of the pandemic that I was very grateful for was Portland State University School of Education had entered into talks with us about some of their students coming forward and offering to support youth and do some tutoring with these kids. And unfortunately, because of the pandemic restrictions, it was difficult for us to actually implement that. But I, even just today, it was brought to my attention that as the decision has been made for students to return in the end of March and early April to school, it's just going to be one more transition. And that transition is going to be difficult. So I think having mentors, having donations of resources, having people volunteer to tutor if they have any kind of academic background. All of those things can be really useful. Maybe even just transportation, people that want to be volunteers to transport kids to school, because certainly we'll have hybrid models for a while here that are going to affect, you know, the days of the week that kids go versus when their parents work. And it's going to be an interesting thing for us to navigate. And so there's many ways, I think, you know, financially, obviously, donations can contribute directly to us providing the right amount of staffing and transportation and the costs incurred there, the supplies that youth are going to need to be involved on a hybrid basis, the safety supplies around following COVID guidelines and making sure that youth have all the sanitation materials that they need in place. Schools are going to have a very high expectation for opening back up and keeping our kids safe. So I think just looking for all those opportunities to donate and assist, there's a million of them out there. And again, contact our agency if you feel like you're someone that could offer any type of assistance. And we'll get you going.
This is Claire Rosciato with KBOO News in Depth.